Okay, Revelation chapter 12, and then 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Revelation 12. Do I have any bulletin about the recital? June 9th? Yeah, okay. I have several participants in that. It'll be music like we just heard. So, that'll be on a Thursday night. Revelation chapter 12. Verse 9. Revelation 12, 9. And it says, "And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death." Okay, notice in verse 9, the first action of the devil would be deceiving the world, and of course he's doing a masterful job in that. But if he fails to deceive every single individual, which he has failed in when you trusted Christ, he has failed to deceive you at least in that area. Okay, then he goes to verse 10, and he will accuse you, bring up accusations against you to God, and then bring up accusations about God to you, and then in the home he'll bring up accusations between the husband and wife to get them fighting, and then he'll bring up accusations between the kids and the parents to try to get them fighting. Okay, that's kind of his techniques. Okay, 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 8. I'm sorry, 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3. It says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of the strongholds." The strongholds, like a full Nelson, like a wrestling thing. "Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled." Okay, let's pray. Lord, I pray you'd help us to recognize when the devil and his cohorts are attacking our families, and I pray that you'd help us to have discernment and discretion and know how to recognize these things and to know how to express our anger and rage against the accuser rather than the ones he has accused. And I pray that you'd help us to have homes that are homes of security, homes of solitude, homes of joy. And I pray you'd help us to see what your word has for us. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, notice verse 5 that the battle that we're facing will be about imaginations and thoughts. And I want to work on the subject this morning on recognizing spiritual attacks on your family. The last months, you know, off and on, I've been hitting spiritual warfare. You know, Ephesians 6:12, we wrestle not against flesh and blood and things like that. And a couple weeks back, I showed that the outward signs of a spiritual battle, because you and I cannot see the spiritual beings around us, you know, the angels, you know, and the devils, or people call them demons, or the imps, or the whatever you want to call them, the elves. An elf is a little devil. And all these little things, you know, and we can't see them, and I think that's for our benefit in a way, because if we could see everything going on around us, we'd probably have to put us in a nut house. Okay, but yet we take it by faith. Now, most any Christian will at least admit that they believe in angels, but a lot of them don't want to believe on the negative side. But yet, as far as their work, as far as the devil's works, is they will bring accusations against you. And they're type of beings that like to divide and conquer. They divide the family and they try to conquer. Of course, you can obviously see that the family structure in America is in a shambles. And it's going to get worse and worse. And the reason why is because people are not recognizing the spiritual warfare. Often, Satan will attack the one under authority. Genesis chapter 3, he didn't go to Adam first, he went to Eve first. And the reason why he does that is he gets the one under the authority to feel like the one over them is limiting them and not giving them something that they deserve. Teenagers tend to think, well, my parents, they just don't want me to have fun. And they just don't want me to have a good time in life. You know, like, you know, that's what parents, you know, like what we're supposed to do is, you know, make our kids miserable or something. But that's what will go in their head. Okay, and what the devil will do is he'll bring accusations against the parties, divide them, and conquer them. And a person needs to recognize these things and understand these things. Now, outward evidences of spiritual control or influence in your community is idols. You see a bunch of statues, a bunch of idols, a bunch of images. That's an obvious outward demonstration of satanic influence. I don't care if you call them Christian statues or I don't care what you call them. Images are forbidden on the second commandment of the Ten. Bow down and worship them. Okay, then you have imaginations. Now that's where we mentioned this morning here, casting down imaginations. We need to realize that when thoughts, as we're sitting here, there are hundreds of radio stations going through our heads right now, through this building, hundreds of them. Shortwave, FM, AM, these radio waves are bouncing like this. And if you had the right feelings in your teeth and a speaker coming out of your ear, if you turn a certain way, you might be able to pick up on some of it. But then you got the TV stations. Then you got all these cell phones. You know, there's no special little wire connected from the cell phone to this. Those words travel through the air. Now, how all that stuff gets where it's supposed to be, I can't figure out. But that stuff is bouncing through us. And so these thoughts will settle in our head for a brief minute, and now we got to deal with it. So when you get a thought in your head, you have to realize that can come from three sources: God, the devil, or me. And you have to understand these things. And the way that you can understand these things and understand it quickly is you can recognize, obviously by the scriptures, how it matches the scriptures. If it doesn't match, then you have to assume that's either God or me, or the devil or me, because God wouldn't go against this book. Now, probably the best outward example of satanic attacks in your family or influence, probably the clearest outward example is anger. Someone getting mad. If you would look in Proverbs 14, verse 17. Now, I know at all times, sometimes we're going to lose it and get mad about things. And it's not a sin to get angry. But the sad thing is most people that get angry are sinning when they're angry. The Bible commands you to be angry and sin not. So there's a right kind of anger and a wrong kind of anger. But most times people's anger is toward the wrong, that's not directed to the right object. Proverbs 14, verse 17. It says, "He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly." See that? "He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated." Okay, the reason why you can't get soon angry is because when you get a thought in your head, very often what the devil will do is if you haven't, you know, if you've been 4 or 5 or 8 hours away from your family or 10 hours or whatnot, 12 hours, okay, but when the next time you see them, maybe an hour or two before you see them or 3 or 4 hours before you see them, a thought's going to come in your head about your family.
about your wife, about your husband, about the kids. An accusation of some sort. You know? Oh, so-and-so has been a brat all day long, you know, that's the way it is, you know, and all that stuff. An accusation comes in your head. Somebody's accusing them. You know, your wife's been doing this, and then puts thought in her head, well, he's been doing this. Okay, an accusation. An accusation is not evidence. But what most people do, a lot of people do, is when they get this accusation, they get angry immediately. For no reason at all. He that is soon angry, it says, he that is soon angry dealeth foolishly. First, you got to ask yourself, where did that thought come from? Next thing you got to tell yourself, I can't prove that. And you got to search the thing out. A lot of times when people get an accusation from somebody, maybe a parent has another adult say something, well, your kid did this, and immediately they're angry. That's dealing foolishly. First, you have to find out the story and then deal with it. But a lot of times then we start haranguing the kid, harassing him in anger, trying to search out the thing. And of course, they're scared to death now because you're mad, and then they're going to probably lie to you anyway because the motive behind lying is fear, and you can't get the real story. So to get angry soon, it says, he that is soon angry dealeth foolishly. Look in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 9. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 9, it says, be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Will Rogers said, he that flies off in a rage always makes a bad landing. And that's a pretty good quote. Okay, now, foolish people believe the accusations, and they don't search it out. And if you would look in Ephesians chapter 4, anger is an outward evidence of some sort of a spiritual attack. Ephesians 4, verse 26. Now, how do I know that? It's because verse 26 and 27 go together. You'll see that's not a sentence or a period at the end of verse 26. So the sentence is covering two verses. And the first one says, be angry and sin not, let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil, implying that if you don't fix it that day, then the devil shows up and he takes up residence, giving him place. Now, you know, I've said it time and time again, you know, you and I know that when the Bible uses the word devil here, we know that Satan can be only one place at one time. But his little imps do the same cotton-picking thing. And so they just kind of, they like, if you can imagine this, or take it by faith, where you have a little imp sitting in the corner of your room where he has thrown in an accusation in one mind and thrown in an accusation in another mind, and they both foolishly believe it, and so then they get in a knockdown, drag-out fight, and he's in the corner going, enjoying it. When they both should gang up against it, and pray the thing back to hell, or down to hell, or send it into a pig, or somewhere, or get rid of it. Express our anger toward the accuser, not the accused. Now, in Ephesians 4, verse 31, here is basically the outcome all encompassed together. Ephesians 4, 31, it says, let all bitterness, and wrath, and anger, and clamor. Clamor is yelling and screaming. That goes with anger. Yelling and screaming. And evil speaking, cussing. Throw everything all in there. And he says this, be put away from you with all malice. Malice is ill feeling towards somebody. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Now that should be demonstrated in a home more than anywhere. But the opposite is often the truth. And you'll see in Ephesians 5, there you have the home mentioned down there in verse 20 down to the end. It's about the family. And so these things are things that we should be practicing on a home, or at least realize these things.
Now, the idea of malice, in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 20, it says, be understanding in men, but in malice be children. You know, we've all probably heard of it, maybe even seen it, where you have two little boys who are buddies. You'll see them all the time playing about certain things and goofing off, you know, playing cops and robbers. And yeah, I still believe you ought to get the little sticks out and pretend, and you know, use guns, play guns. You know, I don't care what the public school says and all the non-zero tolerance and all that kind of stuff. Let the little boys be boys. Amen. Throw dirt back and forth, you know, have a grenade, you know, and get a stick and make it out to be a gun and shoot each other and play dead and all that stuff. Let them be kids the way they want to be. But even at that, you've heard of two little boys goofing off, and all of a sudden they get mad at each other for some reason, and they get in a fight. And they get done with their fight and probably help each other up, and then after about 10 minutes later, they're buddies again. In malice, it says, be children. In malice, be children. Adults, they like to hold a grudge for years and years. But you see, in malice, be children. Now, as far as anger goes, what happens if we're not willing to forgive? Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 2. When forgiveness has been expressed or asked or begged or, you know, whatever, and restitution has been made, when a person is not willing to forgive and it retains the grudge or the bitterness, 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9 says, for to this end also did I write, that I might know the proof of you, whether ye be obedient in all things. To whom ye forgive anything, I forgive also. For if I forgave anything, to whom I forgave it, for your sakes forgave I it in the person of Christ. Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, we are not ignorant of his devices. Now what's the implication there? The grudge of verse 10, or the bitterness that's retained in verse 10, gives an unfair advantage to our opponent, and he don't need any advantages over us. I mean, he's got 6,000 years of experience with man. He knows his Bible better than any of us. And we don't need to give him an upper hand when he's already got it. And what we're doing is we're basically tying our hands behind our back and then trying to fight this thing. Okay, now as far as this anger and strife goes, the first time the word anger shows up in the Bible is in Genesis 27, verse 45, and it's the rage of a brother against brother. Genesis 27, verse 45. This is the story when Rebekah lost her faith in the promise of God, where God promised that his blessing was going to give to the younger son, Jacob, instead of Esau. And she knew that her dad's heart, or her husband's desire, was really towards Esau, because he was more of the hunter, the country boy, and Jacob was more of the mama's boy. And God had already promised he's going to give to Jacob, and then all of a sudden, here comes his blessing, and Rebekah had heard that, Isaac's going to get that blessing to Esau, and she lost her faith in God because God said he's going to go to Jacob anyway. And so she connived and snuck that thing in there, when if she would have kept her faith in God, God would have intervened and gave it to Jacob anyway. Now the blessing went to Jacob, but it went to him through the wrong means. The end doesn't justify the means. Rebekah was still punished in this affair, because what she did is, when she saw that Esau was mad, and he was a redhead fella, you know, of course, you know, you got the temper with that when he's a hairy fella, it says about him. Genesis 27:45, it says, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him. I tell you what, lady, he ain't forgetting that. And it says, and then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? Well, there is no account that she ever saw him again. She's thinking he's going to go over there for a month or two, maybe six at the most. That turned into 20 years. Her conniving
lost her 20 years of seeing her boy, and if she died before he came back, which that's what it looks like, she never saw him again. So much for being sneaky and losing her faith in God. But the idea here is his anger. That's the first time the word anger shows up in the Bible, and it's brother against brother. He's mad at him. Why? Because Esau didn't get his way. And that's often why people get mad. They don't get their way. Now, this is probably more of a fault of young men more than anything. But I know, ladies, you got a temper too. But to young men in particular. Look, if you would, in 2 Samuel chapter 1. Young men in particular, especially when they're playing sports and when it's really evident. And here's a case in the Bible where these guys were just going to practice. They were just going to play wars, what they were going to do. And this is involving Abner and Joab and their soldiers. 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 14. It says, "And Abner said to Joab, 'Let the young men now arise and play before us.'" 2 Samuel 2, 14. See, they're just playing. They're just playing a game. It's going to be, you know, with swords and stuff, but they're just practicing. It's just pretend. It's just play. Look what happens. "And Joab said, 'Let them arise.' And then there arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin, which pertained to Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David." So you got 12 and 12. And it says, "And they caught every one his fellow by the head and thrust the sword in the fellow's side. So they fell down together." Man, what kind of a game are they playing? Man, that's a real thing. They're stabbing each other. They're mad. Verse 17, "And there was a sore battle that day, and Abner was beaten, and the men of Israel before the servants of David." It started off just to be a game. That thing turned into a real war. Now, in America, you know, it gets down to knockdown, drag-out fights. They don't, you know, on rare occasions, you'll see them where they'll try to kill the guy. But in Europe, this stuff gets more serious than these soccer games. There have been people stampeded to death in these things. And then a few years back, there was some real good soccer player from Colombia, and they were expected to win the cup that year, and I guess this guy, this real good, excellent player, that basically they thought it was a shoe-in, a guaranteed, you know, and all these drug lords down in Colombia had been betting on the soccer thing, and that guy botched it and lost the soccer thing, and he went back to Colombia, and they killed the guy over it. Over soccer? Over their money. They didn't get their way. You see, that's the complete manifestation of anger, is killing somebody. Now, prior to that, before they get to killing somebody, they just throw things around. Where does that come from? Well, in the Bible, remember Moses went to the top of the mountain, got the Ten Commandments, wrote in two tablets. He comes down from the mountain, and he hears some music playing. And that music sounds like war. And he thought there was a noise in the camp, it says. And he gets down there and he sees them dancing. You know, Elvis is singing and everything, and they're dancing. And they got the golden calf. And he gets mad. What is it? He throws some stuff around. He throws the Ten Commandments around. Breaks all Ten Commandments at a dance. You know, kicks on something, you know, throws this. You know, in sports you see him throw a baseball bat like it's the problem. Dumb bat, didn't work. No, it's the idiot swinging it. Get mad at him. You know, always, you know, now at this time of year in professional basketball, it's playoffs. And if you watch this thing, you'll see every single call an argument. Every call they're griping. Why? It's because they didn't get their way. It's their anger expressed. Soon angry. It's a fool. Now, sometimes people say, well, you know, I need to vent myself. Well, so do I. Well, it doesn't really matter what I said or did, you know, because I was just mad. Well, tell Moses about that. Yeah. Moses, the meekest man who ever lived, according to Numbers 12. But yet you can push a man so far where he just loses it. And we all have probably been there. And some child abuse cases, because mama didn't take care of it, or papa didn't take care of the little things, and finally they just got fed up and went overboard. But when Moses did that, he came when in Numbers chapter 20, remember that story, where the people just kept hounding him, said, "We want water, I'm thirsty, we need some water," and all these, 2 million people, and they're crying and griping about it. And so God said, "Okay, go to that rock, talk to the rock, and some water's going to come out." And Moses is just steamed. He's so mad. He's fed up with these people. And so he takes a stick and beats the rock out of anger. And what happened because of that? He forfeited his right to go into the promised land. Right. And he couldn't come back. "Well, Lord, I was mad." Oh, does that mean you could lie when you're mad or do some things when you're angry? Anger's no excuse in these things. And so as far as this anger goes, let's, if you would, look in Proverbs chapter 14. How do we deal with these things? Wise and strong people defer anger. And a lot of times we call this the mellowing out process. Sometimes the older you get, sometimes you just don't get mad about things anymore. I don't know if you're just too tired to get mad about it or what. But the thing is, you've been tired of fighting for so long, just saying, forget it. Actually, what it is you realize it's not worth fighting about everything. You got to analyze it. Is it going to matter at the judgment seat of Christ? What color the carpet is? It ain't going to matter. So Proverbs 14:29, a person has to catch themselves. It says, "He that is slow to wrath is of great understanding, but he that hasty of spirit exalteth folly." You got to catch yourself. Some people say when you get mad, count to 10. When you're really mad, count to 100. I don't know, you forget to count sometimes when you're so mad. But the thing is, be slow to wrath. You got to understand some things. What do you got to understand? You got to understand spiritual warfare. You got to understand, okay, where'd that thought come from? You got to see through the situation. Okay, Proverbs 15, verse 18. "A wrathful man stirreth up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife." Proverbs 16:32. "He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh the city." That verse is telling you and I that the greatest soldier is the man who can conquer himself. As far as military geniuses go, there's a man named Sun Tzu that some people have read his books on military warfare. Joshua never lost a battle when he led the charge. David never lost a battle when he was there on the field. Those are two generals, never lost a battle. Oliver Cromwell, he did a pretty good job as far as the battlefield goes. Some people would say that Alexander the Great was a great soldier. I mean, he conquered the known world, but he was 33. But Alexander the Great couldn't conquer himself. Alexander the Great was a drunk by the time he was 15. He was a private tutor of Aristotle, who was a sodomite. And Alexander the Great died a suicide at age 33 as his teacher. Aristotle died a suicide. I don't know what his age was, but I don't consider that great. You see, greatness is a great soldier, somebody who could conquer his spirit and rule his spirit, according to Proverbs 16:32. And basically, I'm not saying don't get angry. It doesn't say don't get angry. It says be slow to anger. And so what you do, you defer your anger. Look in Proverbs 19, verse 11. Direct the anger to the right source. Proverbs 19:11, "The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression." Okay, express anger. Express it toward the accuser, toward Satan. Get mad at him. Get mad at the devil. Get mad at the world. It's amazing to me, young kids a lot of times rebel against the parents that love them and care for them, and they want to go this certain route, and they want to serve the devil. They're serving a being that hates their guts. They're serving somebody that doesn't even care for them. If they're going to rebel, okay, exercise your attitude of rebellion. Rebel against the world. You know, I've been doing that for a long time. You know, I like what the world tells you to do. I rebel against that. And stand against the world because the world hates you. The devil hates you. Okay, if you're going to be rebellious, rebel against them. Stand against them. Why stand against somebody that loves you instead of somebody that hates you? But defer your anger. Verse 11, defer it to who it's supposed to be deferred to. Get angry at the system. Get angry at the false prophecy. Get angry at the false prophet. Get angry at the one that's telling them these things. Get angry at the accuser, the one who's trying to accuse you and try to divide your family. Get mad at that one. You know, a lot of times when you get involved in a family fight or something, you're trying to help be a mediator in there. A lot of times it's a dangerous thing because they'll turn on that person who's trying to help them. What they ought to do is they ought to get together and turn on the devil and his crowd, because that's the crowd that's trying to hurt you instead of the one trying to help you. So wise and strong people defer their anger. Now, what if you're the recipient of that anger? Look in Proverbs 15, verse 1. You got to be strong. You got to be wise. You got to have discretion. But humble and patient people try to pacify it. Proverbs 15, 1. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. And what's human nature say? You see, a soft answer. See, when somebody's yelling at you and mad at you, and you can tell they're mad at you, you know, it bothers your spirit. And of course, you want to say something back. But the grievous words, just like fire with fire, throwing gas on the fire. And the thing is humble yourself. You say, yeah, but I don't deserve it. What do you mean you don't deserve it? We deserve hell. If somebody yells at you, how many times have you done something wrong you never got yelled at it for? Okay, just take this for the time you got away with it. That's all you got to do. So just take it. It's good, good lessons. Humble yourself. Proverbs 21, verse 14. There's another one. A gift in secret pacifieth anger. And a reward in the bosom, strong wrath. Now, those are some things you can do, but spiritually. Let's do some strong spiritual battle warfare. Look in Ephesians chapter 4. Here's the best thing a person can do. Ephesians 4, go back to, I hit 30, 31, 32. I hit 31, 32, where the action's taking place there. Where he says, put this away from you. Okay, it says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Why? Because of the next verse. What if God chewed me out for every stupid thing I did? He'd still be chewing me out. What if God punished me for every single thing that I've done? Boy, thank God for His long suffering. The reason why we should be patient with people is because God's been patient with you and I. Thank God for that. But he says in verse 32, and be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted. Tenderhearted. That's a tough thing. Because verse 31, you want to be tough hide, but you got to have a tender heart. Verse 32. Tenderhearted. Why? Forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. We've all been a recipient of God's forgiveness. And so if you want to be like Jesus Christ, you want to be like Him, then forgive His followers the way He's forgiven them. Verse 30, how do we do that? We do that by the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God is grieved when we don't obey verse 31 and 32. Humble and patient people, they pacify anger, and they realize, you got to realize that if you have mercy, look in James chapter 2. If you want God's mercy on you, then you're going to have to give it towards somebody else. James 2 verse 13. You say, well, that's selfish. Yeah, sure is, isn't it? I could care less about it being selfish. I want mercy from God. Now, if I'm going to get some mercy from God, then he's going to say, okay, if you want mercy from me, then you better give it to somebody else who has been forgiven by me. James 2:13. It says this, "For he shall have judgment without mercy that hath showed no mercy. And mercy rejoiceth against judgment." That footnote down there runs into a place where it's exampled by Jesus Christ as far as a parable in Matthew 18. And it gives the whole story there. How that the Lord will often grant mercy towards a party according to how they grant mercy to somebody else. It's equal footing there. And the Matthew 18 story is right there. But you see, humble and patient people try to pacify the anger, and wise and strong people try to defer the anger. You see, anger, men that don't have a temper, you know, they got a problem. You got to have some temper. It's got to be controlled. You know, steel has temper. That's what makes it, like a 440 steel. I think that one time I remember, a 440 is good steel. It's got temper to it. But you see, that temper's controlled. It's directed to the right thing. And so a person has temper. The Lord got mad in Mark chapter 3. You see, he got mad at the false prophets. He got mad at the Pharisees. He got mad at the religious leaders. He got mad at the people when they had no belief in him. In essence, they were calling him a liar, and it got him mad. You see, but that's a controlled thing. And so the Lord's got his anger. Now, you see what hell is? Hell is the outward manifestation of God's anger. Why is he mad? They rejected the greatest sacrifice known to man. I mean, rejecting the greatest sacrifice, and God says, if you're that stupid not to take my son, you deserve my wrath. And you got a bunch of people trying to set up some little religious show, thinking that their little good deeds are going to be as good as Jesus Christ. That's how you get God's anger manifested on them. And so the Lord wants us to be wise and strong people and defer our anger and defer that anger to the accuser, not the accused. And when we're recipients of this anger, recognize these things and humble ourselves and try to pacify that anger until the Lord can intervene and give us strength so that our homes can have security and solitude. And that's what the Lord wants us to have. A home that's secure and happy and safe, and people can come there and have relaxation, and the best friends that you have will be in your house. That's what the Lord wants. And we pray that the Lord allows us to do that. Okay, so let's pray. Lord, I do pray you'd help us to realize that we're in a spiritual battle and trying to have a Christian home. Lord, the Bible believers all across this country, that a lot of their homes are just in shambles. And Lord, I do pray you'd help us to recognize the real enemy here. The real enemy is the devil and his crowd, where they're trying to split our homes, trying to divide us by conquering us. And Lord, I do pray you'd help us to understand what long-suffering's about, as far as the way you are long-suffering to us. Oh, thank God for your mercy. And Lord, I pray you'd help us that when we get angry, and we're all going to get angry, I pray, Lord, that you'd help us to recognize the spiritual warfare that we're a part of and to win the battle. And you've promised we're more than conquerors. It's just that we have to access the weapons you've given us. Well, heads bowed and eyes are closed, recognizing spiritual attacks in your family, uncontrolled rage, things like that. Pray that God gives you discretion. Pray that God gives you wisdom. The piano, the instruments plays, the altar's open if you need it.